Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. I am Pam Ray, along with my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is an after midnight show, which means while we do not allow for smut, porn, or overly graphic violence, we do allow for a bit more adult language and content. If you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have up to 2 shows per night with a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something for everyone's taste. Also, make sure when we get a chance to go to Amazon.com and check out the poetry anthologies that Late Night Poets has for sale, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. Now, for tonight's contest, Rex and I ran a contest on All Poetry with 2 paintings of Pablo Picasso's, which was Reading the Letter and Olga Deep in Thought. And we got people writing to both of them. We got a nice variety of responses, like people really delved into the emotions of the painting, and I'm very much looking forward to this show. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
All righty, then.
All righty. Awesome sauce. So, you know, it's funny because I'm so used to relating Picasso to his cubism period and his blue period, that I forget that there was other types of artwork that he did. And in fact, I think the style of these paintings were referred to as neoclassicism, which was a time period that he went through after his cubism.
Yeah. He liked to dabble in plenty of different venues.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Which was good. I think that's what helps keep a mind healthy is giving it things to ponder upon that are new and ever-changing. So, you know, and plus it gives us a wide variety.
Your thoughts.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, let's see here. I guess I will go ahead and start us out with a SoundCloud piece. And since that's the first one on the list, and this is Two Peas in a Pod by Eric Svensson. And I'll go ahead and push play as soon as I find it. Here we go.
Two peas in a pod. Complexities of a painting. Pink Panther ponders, wonders about such tangible terms of endearment. References scant. Hidden gems studio stash. Discovered after the Spanish bull died. Perhaps a painted love letter to life memoir. Conjecture, not the prefecture of art critique. Paint and brush do pique interest in letters. Perennial camaraderie between bull and matador. Was French poet, playwright, short story writer, novelist, Guglielmo Apollinaire, Picasso's Achilles' heel. Two peas in a pod. Painter and poet. Remakers. Orphism fell in love with cubism. Love child surrealism resulted. Factual strings and strains through time. Mind macrame knits a thesis. Imagination quilts luxurious dexterity. Complexity of a painting. Somber brown and beige set the tone. Downcast eyes study a malleable letter. Large hand rests on confidant shoulder. Reader's right hand cups his chin. Comfortable camaraderie cocoon. Creative muse won't be rushed. Intimacy of letter content casts a spell. Two spelunkles huddle in a lilac cave. Secluded curve along the Spanish coast, perhaps. Attire reminds of yesteryear's dress code. Painter and poet, two peas in a pod. Research reveals poet P died in November 1980 from the Spanish flu. Gratitude flares up upon this fact. Poetia's mother survived the Spanish flu as a baby in June 1980. Ode to camaraderie, captured with oil on canvas. Heirloom held back till painter P could walk out of life into creative realm pod. Emotive moment mesmerizes. Powerful poignancy of perfumed letters. Wax seal embossed sanctity. Safely stashed secrets open to conjecture. Horse and carriage life. Creative head's cauldron. Condensed matters of the heart. Somber brown and baleful beige. Friendship launched a thousand ships. Paved the way for today's surrealistic painter and poets. End poem.
Great read there, Eric. The SoundCloud is very much appreciated. And just a reminder to everyone who writes for the show, if you can't call in, but you can record your poem with SoundCloud or YouTube and share it with us, that is very much appreciated because then we get to hear your poetry and your voice. And before we continue on with the commenting, I would like to welcome Kel to the show. Welcome, Kel. Glad you could join us, and how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you, Pam?
Oh, I'm doing
great. Hey, Kel.
Great.
Hello, hello. Who's all here?
It's just me, you, and Rex, the three turkeys.
And
bring
our volunteers.
We'll
keep the show going.
There you go. Exactly. Gobble, gobble. All right. And Rex, share with us your thoughts on Eric's poem.
It's a complex pondering on the portraiture offered, especially since he hits in that first stanza. Hidden gem studio stash discovered after the Spanish Bull died. Perhaps the painted love letter for life memoir. That's a nice ponder store, considering there really isn't any background to draw on. But hey, you know what? He offers the next book. Conjecture, not the prefect of art critique. Paint and brush do pique interest in letters. I like the thought, the perennial camaraderie between the bull and the matador, a French poet, Guillaume Apollinaire, asking if that was Picasso's Achilles heel. Again, the thought, a pondering thought. Then the dream into the angle of two peas in a pod, the thought of painter and poet, dream makers, those with different thoughts and ideas, but still walking the same value in expressionism from that day and age, the early 1900s. So, and I like the thought with offering a complexity of a painting, somber brown and beige set the tone. Downcast eye study a malleable letter. Then the thought with creative muse won't be rushed. And he offers up the thought with Apollinaire's death and the camaraderie. He hits on the back end, condensed matters of the heart, somber brown and baleful beige. Friendship launched a thousand ships, paved the way for today's surrealistic painters and poets. So there's a kind of a tribute and acknowledgement of these two during their time and what came forth after their passing.
Absolutely. I like that you brought that up, what came, like how they set an example for future artists and poets. And I like that you mentioned how the colors of the painting were mentioned, and the idea that they do set the tone. I think that was a wonderful analysis of the poem itself. So very well said. And Kel, your thoughts on Eric's poem.
I appreciate his work. There was something I saw. Oh, yeah. Creative muse won't be rushed. Intimacy of letter content casts a spell. Two spelunkers settle in a lilac cave. There's that color again. Along the Spanish coast, perhaps. That's how I remind of yesteryear's dress code. Is it the way he describes the poem, but the painting, is just really, really brilliantly done. And, you know, descriptive in poetic form. So it's really the brilliant piece, and there's a lot more to it than I'm mentioning, but yeah, it's just really, really awesome.
Absolutely. You're right. It is a brilliant piece, and his use of description is spot on. And that was just an excellent comment. And the thing, what I really appreciate about Eric's, there's a lot of things I appreciate about this poem, but one of the things is that he already either knew this information or he read the article that I provided a link to with the painting. And the thing with this painting, the reading the letter, is it was discovered after Picasso's death. He never spoke of it. So a lot of what people see into it is speculation. Like a lot of people believe that this was painted in 1921, although that could be off, that it was a French poet, a friend of his that's as mentioned in Eric's poem, who had died, and that it was a tribute to him and to their friendship. Some people see this as being a homoerotic painting, a painting of sensual love between two men, and others see it as a friendship. And, you know, I don't know for sure. I do know that Picasso chased a lot of skirt, but that doesn't mean he didn't chase pants legs too. So, you know, but at least from what I read. But I like when he mentions, when Eric says in the first stanza, the pink panther ponders. And to me, what that talks about is how when you get a work of art like this, when you get a work of art where the artists themselves didn't talk about it, and it's discovered after their death, it's really up to us as the observers to read into the painting, to try to figure out what we get out of it. I really like creative muse won't be rushed. Intimacy of letter content casts a spell. Two spelunkers huddle a lilac cave. I thought that was a really cool use of the word spelunkers, kind of that to represent diving deep into something. And I think that's very twofold in the idea that the characters in the painting are diving deep into the letter, and we, as the observers of the art, are diving deep into the art. This is definitely a strong and intriguing write that really gives much food for thought. So, and of course, I do like that end line too. Friendship launched a thousand ships, paved the way for today's surrealistic painters and poets. And as Rex said, they set an example. After their deaths, their example of the potential that art has to be something out of the box, and I know Rex didn't say that, but I'm paraphrasing, it's something that will last. It'll last forever.
A kickback to that Helen of Troy motif, the face that launched a thousand ships.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a really good point there. I have to say the one thing I find most intriguing about this picture is how, and this has been pointed out in the description of the picture, is how the one hand on the shoulder is larger than all the other hands.
That's a touch of abstractness. So that's either thought to be comfort in the moment. You need a larger hand because the letter's kind of that sad, or
I was thinking that
there's
too,
something
right?
else behind it. But I don't know about this being done in 1921, 3 years after his death. That kind of seems a kind of stretch, because you'd want the visual in the moment.
Well, like I said, you definitely make a good point there, because the guy died in 1918. Like I said, the article said 1921, but it said that wasn't a for sure date. That's just what most people believe. But of course, as you said, it's 3 years. But then again, we don't really know. Like, maybe Picasso had that good of a memory. Or, there's definitely different possibilities.
Well, cameras weren't the big thing yet either. They were just coming in the mode.
Yeah. So it would have had to have been, if there wasn't a picture of his friend, although there could have been, but if there wasn't, then it was either painted off memory and he had a really decent, good memory, or it was, as you suggested, Rex, which is definitely a feasible possibility, because even the experts doubt themselves that this was painted before 1921. Mm-hmm. Going by that theory, I would say it had to have been around 1919.
Well, he was also, Picasso was married in 1918 as well. one Olga
right.
Kokolova. He was married to her for 37 years.
Yes, they had, they had one son together, Paolo, I believe was his name, and the second painting, the second prompt we have is actually a painting of her. And so that was an interesting relationship and an interesting dynamic in how their friends saw them. He ran around cheating a lot, and yet a lot of his friends really did not like her. They found her bland and clingy and, you know, the basically a nag. So, like I said, very interesting dynamics that when people either knew about Olga or researched about her, it really came out in a lot of the poetry tonight. So, you know, let's see. And we'll go ahead and dive into the next one. And, all right. Up next is With Sadness by Oak Blue 34. And I'm going to go ahead and give this one a read. With sadness, I report the passing of your uncle, a good man despite his devilish ways with women and money and his inability to dress in a manner acceptable to society. Paolo died as he lived, poor and alone, his body found by nosy neighbors who became suspicious when he failed to appear at the corner cafe for coffee. I have arranged for a modest burial and paid off his debts by selling the few paintings he owned along with some furniture. The rest you are welcome to retain or have a junk man pick up for sale or distribution to the poor. I recommend the latter. I will miss your uncle, his lively tongue, which conjured stories about conquests, scrapes with the law, and scoundrels who met at the bar he often frequented. Despite his questionable existence, your uncle was always willing to help a stranger to do a favor for a friend or donate small sums to the church. Enclosed, you will find a poem written by your uncle's hand. Read, enjoy, and know your uncle was greatly admired. Gray shadows fall on a stumbled life. Rest in peace. End poem. Oh, I liked that one. I thought that was really nice. And Kel, your thoughts on Oak Blue's poem?
I thought it was really clever. An interesting take on the letter. You know, going into detail about what the letter might have been about. It was just very well done. I really, really quite enjoyed it. It's a little story. It's fantastic.
Absolutely, absolutely. And don't you think it's really neat how because Picasso didn't talk about this painting and because you can't see any words or there's no really strong emotive expressions on the men's faces, that people get to use their imagination and decide for themselves what the letter says? I think that's really neat. And, yeah, that was a wonderful comment there, Kel. Thank you. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, that first stanza kind of opens up on an impersonal note and nature. With sadness, I report the passing of your uncle, a good man, despite his devilish ways with women and money and his inability to dress in a manner acceptable to society. There's almost a touch of disdain in that note. But then he opens up a little bit more personal level. Paolo died as he lived, poor and alone, his body found by nosy neighbors. It became suspicious when he appeared at the corner cafe for lunch. And then again, I have arranged for a modest burial. So this comes as impersonal, personal, but it also walks that line of a touch of reality thrown in, as if Oak has actually addressed or been dressed with some of these details. I have arranged for a modest burial, paid off his debts by selling a few paintings here along with some furniture. And then the thought with I'll miss your uncle, his lively tongue. There's some note of fondness in that stanza. And again, fondness in the next one. Despite his questionable existence, your uncle was always willing to help strangers, do a friend for a favor, or donate small sums to the church. And then the thought with the small poem to finish was a nice closing end to this.
I agree. Absolutely. That was a really nice closing. And I like how you mentioned the touches of reality. Because one of the things I find is that when people die, is that we often glorify them. We often forget the flaws that they had as simple humans, you know, and they become all good, all wonderful. And here we have someone, as you mentioned, it goes back and forth between like kind of an admiration to kind of a, you know, I don't really like this guy. I can't stand his behavior. And then it does bite of that kind of reality. Like here's someone, and I don't know, honestly, I'm guessing it's a male voice, but it really never says, I would guess though, most likely because of the fact, okay, my main reason I'm guessing is because of the fact that he knows a lot of stuff about the women chasing and being a scoundrel. And I think back then that would have been something more, that a male would know about another male. Of course, you know, I don't know what Oak Blue was thinking when he wrote this. I guess he can always let us know. It bites a reality. It has a certain kind of tenderness to it and a kind of appreciation. And I like how he's talking about this person that's passed on, and he realizes that despite their flaws, despite his questionable existence, your uncle was always willing to help. You know, I like that kind of note of admiration. The use of the name Paolo, which was Pablo Picasso's and Olga's son's name, I think is actually a diminutive form of the name Pablo. I'm not 100% sure, so I don't know if this is a poem about Pablo Picasso himself or if it's a poem about his son, or that Oak just decided to use the name because it fit well with the prompt. But I do think it's a wonderful write all the way through, and as you mentioned, Max, I really like the personal touches, and that I like that he threw in that little poem at the end. And I really like those lines. I liked all three lines, but gray shadows fall on a stumbled life. That should be a prompt for a contest. That is just really awesome there.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, all right. Now we got to find something for Rex to read. And then after this poem will be yours, Kel. So
okie dokie.
Just let me know. All right. So up next is I Hate Being a Preacher, But You Give Me No Choice by Time Teller. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
I Hate Being a Preacher, But You Give Me No Choice by Time Teller. I read a letter the other day. Or mean, be careful what you say and write, because words can be forgiven but never forgotten. Well, if we can't forget, how can we truly forgive those people who sail through life like a majestic clipper cutting the waves, never remember, and so find it easy to forgive? The rest of us are driven insane by our own circles of remembrance. We forgive, but the mere memory means we don't appear forgiving, because in reality, we. Let's talk emotional maturity. Let's ghost her or him. Constantly claim we know what they are doing. Constantly push their buttons and never let them have their say. Who exactly is immature? No. When you say you can't read the handwriting and then read it clear as day, you take the piss because you are angry and needed to give retribution, and you did it the bullying way, using your power and use your friends and all your contacts to illustrate your point, and yet you just don't get it. You did it first. I simply mirrored you. You gave me a reputation, making sure you control my destiny. But remember, I don't play to win or lose. I play between me and my God, my conscience, not yours. End quote.
Wonderful read there, Rex. Thank you very much. And tell your thoughts.
Oh, my God. Thank you. Oh, shoot. Wow, it's interesting. You say you can't read the handwriting and then read it clear as day. You take the fist because you were angry and needed to give retribution. I'm not real sure. I like it, but I don't know why. It's a very interesting write.
It is interesting. And, you know, I stumble across poetry like that all the time where I like it, but I can't quite pinpoint why. And I think that's supposed to say now and not know, but I'm not 100% sure. But, like, now when you say you can't read the handwriting and then read it clear as day, you take the piss. Take the piss, I believe, is a British slang term. I really feel like that the handwriting has to do with the handwriting on the wall, which is a biblical reference. And I think what this is saying is you can't see the message that was clearly delivered to you, or you can't say you didn't see the message that was clearly delivered to you and then contradict yourself. But that's just my thoughts on that one part. And before I comment any more, I would like to get Rex's thoughts on this poem.
Yes.
It's the fallacy between voice and deed. If we can't forget, how can we truly forgive? There's the noted adjustments to the baggage one carries, because we get niggardly with the attributes of that little particular rift. So it never goes away because we like to stoke those flames now and then. But the mere memory means we don't appear forgiving, because in reality we are selfish, controlling, rude, supposedly erudite, yet not. Because you look at the next one. Let's talk emotional maturity. Let's ghost her or him. Constantly claim we know what they are doing. Constantly push their buttons and never let them have their say. Who exactly is immature? Well, that's an easy question to answer right there. Now, the thought with you taking the piss, well, you taking the piss because you're trying to piss all over someone by getting everybody and everyone on your team to illustrate just exactly what is they are doing. Yet, they haven't offered anything of yet, but they do come back as a mirror and throw back at you what you've done to them. So it isn't them who is walking that line with the thoughts up top. Words can never be forgiven but never forgotten. There is that note, hey, if you'd left me alone, this wouldn't be a big deal, but you had to keep playing around. I don't play your kind of game to win or lose. Hey, I've got a conscience. Obviously, you do not.
Exactly. Exactly. That is very well said. And, you know, a person can make a mistake, but if you're the person that keeps dragging it out, then you're just the one in the wrong. I think that was fairly, very well expressed there, Rex. And taking the piss is a Commonwealth informal term meaning to mock at the expense of others or to be joking without the element of offense, compared with the American fuck with. So that's where that comes from, and I do think that fits really well with the tone of the poem. And so excellent comments there. Now, I do like that he's the starting line where he says, I read a letter the other day, or meme, because by putting in meme, he brings it into current days. He makes this relatable to current times and days. The rest of us, I like how he says, so how do we forgive if we constantly remember, if we're always driven insane by our own circles of remembrance? And then I really like the line, let's talk emotional maturity. I honestly think that line, while it's fine where it is, would have been really great placed like between a line on its own. Constantly saying we know what they are doing, constantly push their buttons and never let them have their say. Who exactly is immature? It's like, who is immature? The person who made the mistake or the person who continues to drag everything through the mud? It definitely is an intriguing write. It's strong and emotive. And, you know, hey, I got to learn the definition of a new expression. So, you know what? Oh, and of course, that ending. I play between me and my God, my conscience, not yours. You know, you can use your conscience to control your actions and what you say, but not what other people say. So, excellent right there, Time Teller, and thank you for sharing it with us. And let's see. Did you notice, Kel, I found a Picasso cow?
What?
My cow, I changed my cow picture, and it's a painting done by Picasso of a cow.
Oh, I saw that, but I didn't. I saw the meme, but I haven't. My vision isn't the greatest. So yeah, I saw that. I said, oh, she changed her picture again.
Yeah, I like
that. Yeah, I like that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And your poem is up next, Kel. Go ahead, give it a read for us.
Okay. I call this News from Home. Friends, brothers of the same sort, share the family name. One more brother to mention I'm seeing here. An intentional oversight, as they soon find out. His younger brother was meant to join them there on a tourist trip to the city, home on leave from military duty. Brother's delay was known since he had been deployed, planned to be temporary. On this day, however, he received a letter from mother. Huddled together in the local pub, read the letter in silent support, commiserating one with the other. Letter from home was mother, father, and mother. The note, watermarked with tears, told a tale of heartbreaking news. I guess you know where this is headed. No good news from an anguished mother. Brother left behind in war-torn tundra, shot and killed on enemy ground. Even though World War was nearly over, younger brother would never make it back home. Leaning forward over brother's shoulder, reading the letter, a shocked gasp only heard by one to the other. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Kel. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. And Rex, your thoughts.
With the Industrial Revolution and the increased mechanization of the time, this was a war that nobody could have seen it for what it really amounted to. It was brutal beyond any fashion that anyone had ever known in previous wars, because everything else was light compared to this, even though death is pronounced in both ends. This kind of top framework would be that which man can do unto man in the moment, from mustard gas to the tanks to the new machine guns and everything else that came forth during this war. But I like the letter itself, the way it's framed. that thought, using that picture as the backdrop and the sadness wrought in that letter and how it walks the thought with the tone and how the two gentlemen are seated next to each other looking over that. There is a sort of commiseration there. And let's see, the finishing end of this, younger brother would never make it back home, leaning forward over brother's shoulder, reading a letter, a shocked aghast only heard by one to the other. There's that nice tone of collegial atmosphere in the moment, not collegial, so to speak, but, you know, one to another that is engrossing, that touches both ends because of the news it brings.
Absolutely, absolutely. There really is, like, as you mentioned, a kind of sense of an atmosphere of connection and closeness between the brothers as they ponder the news. Wonderful comment there. I really, well, first of all, on a technical level, I like how you have a lot of, you have end rhyme, you have inner rhyme, you have near rhyme, and it makes, and some wonderful alliteration that really makes it flow nicely. This reminds me of the movie Legends of the Fall, which is one of my all-time favorites, like a condensed mm-hmm. version of it. Like, you know, like to me, the connection between the brothers, and especially the way the two older brothers were so protective of the younger one, that kind of bond, that kind of brotherhood is captured in this poem, and I really like that, and I like how you bring out that you bring the father and mother into the right, because obviously they're not in the painting, but to you, and as you convey to all your readers, the father and mother are just as important part of this moment as the two brothers reading the letter. So this is an excellent write and very well done. And
Kel,
did you want to say something about your poem?
Well, I wasn't exactly just with the painting. I didn't read the prompt, mostly because usually when I read the prompt, you know, whatever story might be behind, whatever, you know, I get lost in that. And
I
didn't want to
that.
Do that. I just wanted to go with the artwork. And
yeah,
I went from there. And the looks on their faces and the resemblance between the two made me think of brothers. And their clothing, you know, represented, you know, the time around when the war would have been. So, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I think that's very cool. You know, and a lot of times if there's extra information along with the prompt, I won't necessarily read it all. And the other thing I tend to try not to do is I won't, until after my poem is written, read the other entries in the contest, because I am so afraid mm-hmm. that even if it's subconsciously that somebody's poem or lines or words or thoughts will slip into my poem. And I want to feel
right.
like, you know, it's originally my thoughts as much as possible. So, all right, I think we will go ahead and grab another SoundCloud one. Let's see who has a SoundCloud. I know it was Theo. Theo has a SoundCloud. All right, I'll grab her poem.
Yeah, Theo's been rocking out the SoundCloud lately.
Hasn't she? Oh, my goodness. Freaking kudos to her.
Yeah, she dropped me one for Sunday. There's one for Tuesday. There was this one, and there was another one as well.
I saw four in a row. And been busy.
She has been. She has been. For sure. For sure. I'm just really impressed and really appreciative of her support of the shows, the way she writes, and as you said, Rex, the way she's been, giving out the SoundClouds. By the way, speaking of supportive and nice people, here's something, Kel and Rex, that I think you'll enjoy hearing. So, you remember last night on the show, the Art of Seduction, we were commenting on T. Michelle's poem, the one where Rex had said that it reminded him of the Arabian Nights tale?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so she responded to my comment on her poem, and she said, "Thank you so much, Pam. I enjoyed the way you read it, and I was so happy everyone seemed to enjoy the piece. My heartfelt thanks to Rex, Kel, and Frank as well. And yes, you guys got it right. The biblical hint, the Arabian Nights tales theme, and the communication. That made me ecstatic."
Oh, wow.
Isn't that
wonderful?
Isn't that? Don't you just love?
Who was that again?
I
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's great.
Of course, you know, Rex already knew he was right, but, you know, it's always good to hear.
Which one was that again?
That was the one, the title was Dahlia Budd's Grafting Divinity.
Oh, yes. That was Mandy, wasn't it?
No, that was...
Was it?
No, that was T. Michelle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I gave T. Michelle the silver in the contest and Mandy the gold and Randy the bronze, and then, of course, filled all the HM spots with some other wonderful poetry.
Well, I do remember the 1001 Night. I remember saying something about that.
Yep.
And I do remember Mason's piece, too. That was outstanding.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That was, that was, well, just a night of outstanding poetry. For sure. I better get us refocused. I just had to mention that because, you know, I always enjoy sharing joyful news. And
definitely.
All right. Up next is Reading Olga's Letter by Theo Onick. And we do have a recording for that. So here we go.
Reading Olga's letter. I am reading your letter. I think it is the 1000th time I see something like this. When will it be over and your heart and soul at peace? I moved on, left, when things promised to get too hard. It wasn't easy to say goodbye, but things went well for a while. Things went well. Well. And so seems that the past has ways to come to us back, chasing our guts. The pushed doors and pulled strings to see and reveal, to live with a world set on purpose to create, and about an old shout to speak in just the ways, preposterous tricks played, about an old shout, invite there where I've been before. What do you want me to do? I don't know. Just about now, I... Reading your letter, seeing you all alone, thoughts scattered in a body that plays its life, knowing that I won't care much. I'll just sit and watch a story that speaks of our private cords wrapped in dark ink.
Wonderful read there, Theo. Thank you very much. The SoundCloud is greatly appreciated. as are all the others that you've been providing. And Rex, your thoughts on the poem?
Well, it works on two levels. Either what she's reading right now is the voice in the letter, or these are her third thoughts upon reading that letter. So it's kind of open angle. When will it be over in your heart and soul at peace? There is that offering of it sounds like the letter is reverberating the thoughts of why did you leave? And then she hits on the next one. I moved on, left when things promised to get too hard. It wasn't easy to say goodbye, but things went well for a while. Things went well. And so it seems that the past has ways to come back to us, back chasing our guts. Now, for that line, and so seems that the past has ways to come to us back. That has a hard note at the back, and some people might think of that as it's out of place, but it's not. It's the kind of definitive thought, back, chasing our guts, instead of come back to us chasing our guts. You want that definitive note as back, chasing our guts, to push doors and pull strings, to see and reveal, to live with the world. And then the thought with just the waste, preposterous tricks, an old shout, then there's that note to back to the letter again. And what do you want me to do? It's kind of almost a tearful rejoinder. And the thought, I don't much care. And I won't. I'll just sit and watch a story that speaks our private chords wrapped in dark ink. There's a touch of regret, but not really, because she has clearly moved past the thought of whatever is offered up in the letter. And the goodbye was the goodbye, even though it might tug at her now and then. There is that thought that the back chasing our guts is that little bit of history that kind of just doesn't melt away.
I like that. I like how you speak. Well, first of all, it was a wonderful, thorough analysis of the poem. And I like how you speak of the history and the idea of, you know, chasing that history, chasing those memories. And I think the question, what do you want me to do, is a very important part of the poem. So wonderful comment there, Rex. And Kel, your thoughts?
Oh, my goodness, I got lost in her voice.
It is a beautiful read.
So
she
well
has a beautiful
written.
Voice.
I had a hard time following the poem because I couldn't just listening to her was mesmerizing.
Oh, absolutely.
It is very well written. I had to go over it again a couple
sure.
times. And it's just, it's abstract in some ways, like Rex was saying, because you're not real sure if it's the general portion of it is the letter itself or a reflection of what the letter is saying. And it's just really, really, I'm not saying it's personal for her, it's just a writing. But
You can
see it as being personal. To push doors and pull strings to see and reveal, to live with the world. You know, it's just really brilliant writing. And it just kind of tugs at you. And, of course, her voice, you know. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It really did it.
I think the curveball is, it's called Reading Olga's Letter, and it's done in a female voice. So there is that note throws you off.
Yeah,
that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, now, for me, based on the fact that this is, as Rex mentioned, you know, the title, Reading Olga's Letter. So based on what we know about, what I know and have read about the relationship between her and Pablo Picasso, in the fact that he cheated quite often on her. And then also from personal experience, having been in the abusive and the cheating relationships, been the one cheated on, and having watched friends go through the same thing. You know, there's a certain thing that happens when you're close friends with someone and they're in a relationship that you know is wrong for them. And they will write to you, they will call you, they will email you, you know, they will, one moment they want advice on how to leave, and the next moment they're telling you that you're, you know, just wrong and that their spouse is perfect and wonderful and you don't know anything. And so this really comes across in that way of one female, because as Rex said, it's a female voice. It really comes across as one female friend or comrade saying to another, you know, I see what you're going through. You're not the first. You won't be the last. And then the question, you know, what do you want me to do? And then it's, I'll just sit back. Because oftentimes, that's all you can do. I mean, you can give your honest opinion.
Yeah.
I've been there before where I have, because anybody who knows me knows I can be a fairly blunt person. And if you're in a bad relationship that is abusive, I will bluntly tell you. But, you know, you can only do so much. It has to depend on the person to be ready to walk away, you know, to move on. So you are right with the idea, Kel, that it has a very personal note to it. And not necessarily the author's personal note, although it very well could be, but in the way that it captures that kind of personal connection between friends, and a friend who's willing to say, I'll be there for you, but you have to be the one to step forward and say what you want me to do for you.
Very well said, Sam. Very well said.
Thank you. Occasionally I say something well, you know. And we have Rex so quiet in the background. Are you still there, Rex?
Nope.
Oh, he disappeared.
Oh, my goodness.
Great comments, everybody. Thank you so much. And let's go ahead and wait, I did grab the next poem. And let's see what Jeremy says, what a great performance of a read. She paced those words amazingly. I have to agree with that. And
me too.
We'll go ahead. Yep. I don't know where Jeremy is from, but, you know, Jeremy, if you're listening, you're always welcome to call in and join us anytime you want for any show. But we do appreciate those who hang out on the board and make comments. And so up next is Test Results by Gerald E. Green, and this one also has a recording, so here we go.
Test Results, written and read by Gerald Green. The waiting room is never warm enough, an empty, cold, and unforgiving place. Its fabric walls are nondescript, as if all doctors are disinterested. Each chair is like the next, with metal arms and slightly padded seats, the kind that add discomfort to her new uncertainties, made sharper by the amateur decor. She felt a loneliness in every nerve that tensed in pulses, orchestrated by a hidden pain behind unfocused eyes, unmoving, staring at her woolen dress. A clouded brain, unable to corral its forces, left to wander without strength, to understand or contemplate events, refused to give her what she needed most. Her life had changed, would never be the same, because she'd found a lump by accident that made the last 4 weeks a swirling hell, a spin where circles built a barrier. She wouldn't let her husband see or know, and distance quickly formed between two hearts, inserting guilt into the recipe of pain she followed with rejection's force. Persistent hunger shrunk her form and made the dress hang loosely. Food now made her sick with nausea's waves rejecting every meal. She'd eat a bite or two and nothing more. Starvation added to discomfort and its stress as nerves cried out for remedy. But none was found awaiting test results. And here she was, submissive and depressed. Her zombie-like demeanor was her new reality that pushed aside all else and redefined her life as darkness, where a rotting future left her heart behind. She waited for a nurse to call her name, the surname of her husband she once loved, but now a faded, distant memory where hope and smiles were left a month ago. End poem.
Oh, I know. I think he has an excellent reading voice. I'm so glad he makes recordings. And speaking of poems that hit hard, that is definitely one that does. It has an impact. And Rex, I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
Well, test results, the time offers up its own thought, especially considering the picture he drew from to begin with. But I like the thought of opening up. The waiting room is never warm enough, an empty, cold, and unforgiving place. Its fabric-covered walls are nondescript, as if all doctors are disinterested. That offers a taming note to the physicality of the painting itself, the thought that offering texture to the walls as well as texture to the mood. And then again, second stanza, each chair, metal arms, slightly padded feet, to kind of add discomfort to new uncertainties made sharper by the amateur decor. Again, that reference to the bleakness of the decor, because it needs that that backdrop to offer up, which is coming next, the loneliness in every nerve. I like the thought adding in the woolen dress as a noted thought as well. And then again, the next one, unable to corral a clouded brain, much going on, a lot to think about. Let's see. Then that next stanza, I think it's the fourth one, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, the fourth one, found a lump by accident. Now you know where the rest of the story is going and probably how it's going to end, because he drops in 4 weeks of swirling hell, a spin where circles build a barrier. Life is kind of run amok. The ultimate, almost a betrayal, so to speak, wouldn't let her husband see or know. And all of a sudden, things go even further awry. Because now there's a deep separation and rift between the two, because he thinks she's hiding something and knows she's hiding something, but she's not offering up that which is going on where she needs that steadiness to hold on to. And it goes to the point where eventually he walks out, not understanding, not knowing. And that's where it ends, on such a sad note, where hope and smiles were left a month ago. And that doubles the consternation as well as the sadness in the piece itself, because part of it, she added herself. And in that knowing, makes her even sicker.
Absolutely. I think that was an excellent comment. It was very thorough and thoughtful all the way through, a wonderful analysis. But I think the two parts of your comment that really stood out to me is when you used the word texture, that it added texture to the painting, to the poem, to the thoughts. I really thought that was wonderful. And then I like how you brought up that there's this sense of distrust. You know, that she won't trust him to know what it is she's going through, and he doesn't trust her because, as you said, there's obviously a secret being kept, but she won't say what, and therefore it becomes something that tears the relationship apart. So just excellent comment there, Rex. And Kel, your thoughts?
Well, I thought it was very imaginative, and it's, the images are just amazing. You can actually see this woman, you know, and the thoughts going through her head and everything, and it's just so well done. You just get lost in all of it. It's brilliant. And it just keeps getting worse and worse. It's just so much that the melancholy depresses me. It almost makes you, it's heartbreaking. And it's a reality for some women. You know,
absolutely.
There's things you don't want to say, and you're too afraid to say them, but saying it makes it more real. And but keeping it from her husband wasn't helping either, because, you know, you can't keep secrets from someone who is such a huge part of your existence. You know, it's just an amazing ride.
It is. Absolutely. It hits hard. It's very emotional. You're right, and it delves very deep into the picture. I like how deep he took this, and he didn't just take it on the level, like, it's obviously, like, she's sick, she's got the test results, she knows there's something wrong. And he's captured all that, but then he adds into it the dynamics, as both you and Rex have brought up, how the dynamics of the relationship and how that became affected by the secret keeping. Persistent hunger shrunk her form and made the dress line loosely. I thought that was very visceral imagery. And I think to anyone who's watched someone become physically sick from cancer or other illnesses like that, you see that physical change, and it's haunting, and it's, you know, just, very strong and emotive, right, and very well done. And, all right. Going on to the next. Yeah, I have to agree, Kel. The details of that poem are absolutely amazing. And up next is I Am Olga by Pam H. And it goes like this. I am Olga. I live to dance, a ballerina at heart, enjoying the flow and grace, feeling the energies which I alone create, igniting the stage with passion, the likes you've never seen before. I'm considered mediocre at best. It's what I love, nevertheless. I shall dance until I can move no more. What does this artist see in me? He must be out of his mind. Unless I see a ring, he stands no chance of getting inside. He's a hot, stubborn bull of a man, charges after whatever it is he wants, for it's not about the capture, it's about the hunt. Married me, friends and family far away, my only support now, yet his prick is frequently going out stalking, which is causing me much pain. He might as well bound my feet, a prisoner, a model, a cook, a sham, an angry, misunderstanding wife. How did I get here, Bog? Bog continued to say, he's Picasso, a great artist, and she's, well, she's an untalented sow that struggles with dance. Olga's been made good by his name, so now she stands a chance. As I sit contemplating on my navel over the predicament I'm in, a prison of my own making, no longer certain of who I am. I'm Picasso, end poem. And I really like that one. That was just wonderfully creative. And Kel, your thoughts?
Well, I thought it was an awesome take on Olga, you know, and her passion for dance. And, you know, this, and the heartache of being married to him. You know, then, you know, I like that phrase of hers. Should I lost it? basically he's being led by his prick. You know, but, you know, it's a very moving and emotional writing, and it's absolutely awesome. Beautiful. You know, and it's heartbreaking in how lost she is and just being his wife, you know, and, you know, that's all that seems to be important. Well, you're Picasso's wife. That's all that matters, you know. It's like she didn't matter anymore, and that's very sad.
It is. It is. You're right. It's emotive, it's sad, and it's beautiful. And I like how you brought up her passion for dancing, because I too liked how the poem expressed how she was considered a mediocre dancer, and yet she felt the passion to continue on with it. So I thought that was an excellent comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's about dominance. Not traditional dominance, but dominance of the force of will, that which is seen as the larger-than-life character that one is attached to. She hits on that opening note, I am Olga. But that as it progresses, that transitions into the bottom end, the finish. I'm Picasso. There's that thought of kind of ownership of the moment, because she clearly hits on notes of who and what she is, understands she's not the diva, so to speak, as the ballerina, but she's good enough to dance as one of the extras in a play and still do what she loves. What does this artist see in me? He must be out of his mind. And then he's hot, stubborn, bull of a man, charged after whatever he wants. Or it's not about the capture, it's more about the hunt. So she fully understands, yet marries him anyway, knowing that that is how the game is played in his life. It's all about the stalking, the hunt, and the capture is just the bottom end of things. And then she hits on, well, bound my feet, a prisoner, model, cook, sham, an angry, misunderstanding wife. And then the question, how did I get here, Bog? Well, the thought is you knew what you were walking into, yet you walked into it anyway, thought you could change that which you knew you would not be able to change. And then the offering, he's Picasso, great artist. And she's, well, she's an untalented style that struggles with dance. Okay. At that point, she's been there, done that, and she's heard the whisperings behind her back, and she morphs now into that thought of the bottom end, I'm Picasso, I'm the back end of the name itself, because I am no longer who I am.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment there, Rex. And I'm glad you brought up that end line, because I do think that is extremely important as it shows a shift. It does, I mean, it's the whole rite in itself is a progression. It starts out with a woman who's confident, in fact, as you kind of mentioned, Rex, overly confident in the idea that this man will give her a ring and then change his ways. But, you know, she obviously, like you said, he's all about the hunt and the capture. Well, that's not what he's looking for. And then it just kind of it progresses as she loses more and more of her identity. And even what it says, like, people continue to say he's Picasso, great artist, and she's an untalented style. And then it says, Olga has been made good by his name. So now she stands a chance. There's a real, with it, I think those three lines there are the real turning point where the sense of her own identity starts to be lost. And there is a real sense of control and dominance on an emotional level. And that ending line, as you mentioned, Rex, it's very important in the idea that all self-identity, all self-awareness and strength has been lost because there's nothing like there's nothing more to do at this point than feel as if, you know, you have no identity of your own. She has no identity of her own. And the other thing I find intriguing about this, right, is there had just been the little changes. You could have almost read this backward, like from the bottom up. There does get to be points where it doesn't quite work, but there's quite a few lines where you could start at the bottom and read it up. It's definitely a wonderful thought-provoking write on the whole idea of losing oneself. And also, as mentioned, how oftentimes we think we're going to change the man or the woman who cheats, who whatever it is that they do with other people, we think they will not do with us. So, excellent comments, both of you. Very much appreciated. And let's see what we got next. All right. I think I grabbed something anyways. Let's find out. I did. All right. Up next is Let Me Join Your Journey by Cornelius Burdine. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that last name right, but he can correct me if I'm wrong. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Let Me Join Your Journey by Cornelius Burdine. May I comfort you, my son, for I see you receive news that matters. Your body speaks, the mind a bit undone. Feel free to share, don't paint in shatters. Shall we read it together so I may understand? I see it's written with a feather. Explain the colors your journey went. Ooh, I see. It's from your lover. She writes with an open mind to tell you, for you a strange discover. She will stay in Paris, but leave you behind. Now I can imagine she's no saint, such a sudden and unwanted act, but try to forget and let Picasso paint. We'll stay together. I expect a bit abstract and poem.
Great read there, Rex. And thank you, Cornelius, for the write. I really like the first-person narrative of this and how it takes such a personal tone. And tell your thoughts.
Excuse me. I'm with you. I like the narrative. In the end, he says, now I can imagine she's no saint, such a sudden and unwanted act. But try to forget, and let Picasso paint. We'll stay together, I expect, a bit abstract. I like the way he phrased that, you know, because, you know, Picasso's known more for being an abstract artist than you know than like landscape or what's the word, portrait, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
you know, I like the language, the formation of the letter itself, or his perception of it. And it's just a really, it's kind of a Oh, I can't think of the damn word. It's free flowing and kind of poignantly sweet. You know, just, I don't know, it's just really interesting writing. I like it.
Absolutely. It does have a poignancy to it and almost a sweetness, but like a sweetness mixed in with the kind of bitterness of reality. I think that was an excellent comment. Yeah, excellent comment there, Cal. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, he brings in that large hand in that first line, "May I comfort you, my son. Your body speaks a mind a bit undone. Feel free to share, don't think and shatter." There's a notation there to the cubist angle, shatter. Shall we read it? Get us fine, they understand. I see it written with a feather. Explain the colors your journey went. There's another touch to his motif almost an explanation from the letter, the standpoint of the letter itself, walking through his artistic journey. She writes with an open mind to tell you, for you, a strange discover, stay in Paris, so to leave you behind. So there's a moving on moment. Now, the back end of this, I can imagine she knows saying such a sudden and unwanted act, but try to forget and let Picasso paint. Now, that offers up the back end with this, a little bit of comfort with the note to stay together, and I expect a bit abstract. Now, that's kind of a nice touch to the next period that he's supposed to go into, the abstract angle. But also that instead of the friend with that note to the picture itself, that "May I comfort you, my son" comes across as almost priestly in the moment. Let's see what else. No saint. Now, offering up, there's that notation, she's no saint, but the actuality is he's no saint. And the comfort level is, hey, she left you. You didn't leave her. A little bit of a twisted visage, but it works for the piece to get to that last line of, I expect, a bit abstract, because the fact that he's offering her up as no saint when he is the no saint is the abstract angle drawn to as well.
Absolutely. That is really well said there, Rex. I like how you brought up that, you know, that with all the stanzas, there's different references to Picasso's style of artwork. And that you're right, in that first line when he says son, it does come across as very priestly. And the fact that, you know, this is like one of the first paintings that really, not paintings, sorry, poems that really kind of acknowledges that hand. And while it doesn't say anything like about a large hand, where it says, "For I see, where may I comfort you?" You know, it's, and it makes you wonder, was the large hand in the painting offered up because of it was supposed to represent the hand of a godly figure, a priest, or the hand of an older friend. You know, it gives much food for thought, and this really is a wonderful nod to the different styles of art that Picasso experimented with. And you know, now I can imagine she, like you said, that ending stanza, the person giving the comforting is offering up that the act of now such a sudden and unwanted act. They said, you know, it could be leaving. You know, there's also that potential that maybe it was a suicide, although I don't really expect that. But sometimes if you see words like sudden and unwanted, it does make you think of suicide. But, you know, it's interesting because a lot of times what is sudden and unexpected was usually a lot of times right in front of your face. And, you know, this has the kind of feel of a friend who's saying, you know, I'm just like, you didn't see it and you were right. It was a complete surprise to all of us. But it's interesting how sometimes what can be a complete surprise was there all along, clear as day. So an excellent write and wonderful comments. And see what we got next. Let's see. Let's read what Jeremy has to say. There is an insincerity to the narration. It is like there is an ulterior motive to the words. The spider is calling to the fly. I like that. Yeah. And as Rex responds, an offering. But what might that payment reveal? Very true. Very true. Well said there, gentlemen. All right. And up next is Lost in My Daydreams by Betty Page. Yeah. And Kel, will you give that a read for us? And Rex, when Kel's done reading, will you go straight into commenting? I'll be right back.
Okay, Lost in My Daydreams by Betty Page. Wandering so lost, sitting in complete silence, lost in my daydream. Far away from here, I'm free once again to live, run around, just play. In fields of bright green, watching clouds drift in blue skies, envisioning shapes. Ships carry me off, sails toward castles unknown. Song remains the same. The rider rides horses on the beach, setting ablaze long, sharp swords dancing around fires, enchanting moonlight, stardust cascades upon me, caresses my soul. Wicked winds swirl swift, I'm lost inside castle walls, spirals up staircase, looking out towers, seeing nature's beauty shine, ocean waves crashing. Unicorns roam free, ride upon soft upon shores. Butterflies, fairies, dragonflies take flight, floating along crystal lakes. Snowy owls descend from tall evergreen pine trees. Angelic wings fly, watching over lands, mystical ancient forests. Enchant my lost soul. Love from the heavens kisses my face with pure light, revives my lost heart. Gaze out my windows while fantasies roam within my lucid dreaming and poem.
Great read, Kel. Thank you very much. And Lost in My Daydream. That was the picture number two, the woman sitting. That's actually quite the intense thought going on behind that picture itself, and it considering the backdrop, the bland wall itself, how it sits and how she is sitting. This is an intense daydream, that longing of something more than what the dullness of the backdrop of that picture offers up, and I guess the thought with her, how she's dressed as well. Fields of bright green, watching clouds drift in blue skies and listening shapes. Then it keeps going. Ships carry me off, sails towards castle and high cliffs. Song remains the same. That there is that notation with the song remains the same, that she's living a life bereft, and this is her one and only chance to get past that that beat down existence and walk in something other than feeling so drab, because this is full of color. Riding horses, dancing around fires, chanting moonlight, looking at the tire, ocean waves crashing. This is all about life, and that picture shows the backdrop of a life that's not really being lived, and she fills it with all manner of beauty, butterflies, fairies, dragonflies, crystal lakes, snowy owls, everything she can conjure up. Her imagination is taking her there. It's such a colorful flight. And I like that thought in the ending. My lucid dreaming, wakeful, watchful, nicely touched upon. How about you, Kel? What would you think?
Oh, I thought it was awesome. all the different, each stanza is a poem in itself, and the way she's envisioning things is just absolutely fantastic. It kind of reminds me, when I was a kid, I used to sit and look out the window at school. I'd get in trouble, too. But I daydreamed all the time. And it just kind of threw me back to those days. And I just sit and look out the window instead of doing my studying. Yeah, it's just very, very fluid and the imagery was magical and mystical and just really very well done.
Good there, Cal. All right, Pam. So, okay.
All right, great comments. I have to say, I really like it. And I like, Kel, how you mentioned daydreaming, because I'm very much a daydreamer, not as much as I used to be. Like, when I was a kid, too, it was really difficult to get me to concentrate on anything. But I think it's part of being a creative person oftentimes, is you get so lost in the possibilities of what could be, the magic that's out there in or inside your own mind in the storytelling. And I like that Betty took this in a different direction. First is always, she wonderful use of imagery. You know, we've had a lot of poems and really good poems that have gone deep and dark. And here we have someone that has looked at someone thinking and seen the possibility that they are dreaming about magic, about unicorns and beautiful things and horses on beaches and all the possibilities of living life to the fullest and lost in the kind of joy of daydreaming. Butterfly, fairies, dragonflies take flight, floating along crystal lakes. Snowy owls descend, tall evergreen pine trees. Angelic wings fly, watching over lands. I like how this, to me, a lot of this seems like the whole process of when you come up with a story. When you first just see the images in your mind and you realize that within those owls, within those pine trees, is the possibility for a story or a poem that can be written. And so just an excellent write and very well done. All right. And let's see what we got next. Yes, and Jeremy is right. She really stays loyal to the 575 syllable count per stanza. Which, you know, adds on a technical level, adds to this the poem, the poem's quality. All right. Up next is More Than Friends by Julie Buck, and it goes like this. They were more than friends, two young boys, clean-cut college men. Sam and Eric shared the same rooming house. Crazy landlady delivered the letter to the four hands, addressed to both. The boys read the correspondence together, instinctively knowing something's wrong. As their eyes looked down and read what the letter said, "We regret to inform you, etc., etc." Put his hand on Sam's contemplating shoulder. "Lord, it's getting colder." They were both banned from Ohio State. "But wait, how did they know?" whispered Sam. All he knew was when he got home, damn, and he got a good beating from his irate father. But to defend yet again how he is, why even bother? End poem. I like that. That was a good take on that, and it goes with the theory that some people have that the homoeroticism within the painting, that the more of the idea of it being more of a romantic painting. And Kel, your thoughts.
Oh, golly. Well, personally, I like the reference to Ohio State. Go back.
Right? I figured you would. I when I read that line earlier, I was like, oh, yep. Kel, good old Ohio girl is going to appreciate that.
Hell yeah. Go Buckeyes. Yes. Okay. I'm going through it. It's just taking me a second. I like the progression of it. You know, it's just slowly working up to whatever it is that the letter was supposed to be about. And Eric put his hand on Sam's contemplating shoulder. It brings up as a large hand in the painting. They were both fans from Ohio State. But wait, how did they know? Whispered Sam. All he knew was when he got home, damn, would he get a good beating from his irate father. But to defend yet again how he is, why even bother? It's just, it kind of leaves you wondering, well, what the hell did these boys do? You know, banned from college. You know, it's just, you know, very, very well done. Got a nice little storyline to it. I quite like this piece. Very interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Great comment there. And Rex, your thoughts.
Well, it's open-ended with a who's, where's, white, why's, what, for's, and how's. But it isn't really open-ended. It says everything it needs to say. You just need to apply that which is right in front of you. Starts with the title, More Than Friends. And there's that question. But wait, how did they know? And also answered in the piece itself. Crazy landlady delivered the letter to the four hands. Well, that's easy. If dad is keeping that strict a touch on his son, well, the easiest thing is the landlady will report. Hey, she might get a little bit of something in the mail for herself for keeping dad attuned to that which is going on. And since they are more than friends, and it's repeated twice within the title itself and the very first line, they were more than friends. So the offering up is the boys were lovers, and that is what is getting them both knocked out of college, because this is coming at an era before everything blooms into acceptance. So the angle is... the kid knows what's going to happen when he gets home, but he doesn't, but to defend yet again how he is, why even bother? There's that notation, no explaining, no manner of explaining is going to get him out of this one, because somehow Ohio State found out. That might have been the landlady. That might also have been his father. And that is the idea of getting him home again and away from this elusive other kid who's leading his son down a wrong path, so to speak.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. And you're right. This would have been a time period where there was less acceptance. And it's such a thing as a same-sex relationship could have easily gotten you kicked out of a college, and especially with the right people spending information and pulling purse strings, especially, you know, as you said, you know, if a father is going to keep an eye on his son, one of the best ways to do it would have been the landlady. I do think this is a well-expressed story, and I like how it tells a story, but really with not a whole lot of lines. And I like how there's a kind of conversation. And then the ending lines were really strong with the idea of why even bother. There's such a sense of futility within that. So, excellent comments.
Yes.
And let's see what we got next. Good night, Jeremy. Glad you could be on the board. And yes, please feel free to call in whenever you want to. We look forward to hearing from you. And up next is Composite Shade by Blue Right 76. And Rex, would you give that a read for us, please?
Composite Shade, Pablo Picasso's Olga, Ethan Thorpe. Blue Right 76. Gift of responsibility, homemade and simple daily life, rendered composite by zealous dreams. Bear the cross of the surreal other, banked, washed away with invincible flood. A captivated firefly near the light. And others walk into history, wearing the shade of a mammoth course of art, took and gave sustenance of wisdom, of love and patience. As she pondered upon chores and self-yearning, his revealing strokes in immortal shade, in unfeigned abandon, rendered her reality on simple canvas, truthful expression, relentlessly carved. End poem.
Great read there, Rex, and thank you, Blue Right 76, for sharing that with us. Very much appreciated. And Kel, your thoughts.
So kind of going through it, if you guys can go ahead and lead the way.
Sure, absolutely. I really liked I think the opening lines really set the tone. Just a responsibility, a homemade and simple daily life rendered composite by zealous dream, bear the cross of the surreal other. Now, to me, that takes on the tone of having to be the responsible housewife and also bear the expectations of what it's like to be somebody who's a famous artist, and the use of the word surreal being a reference to Picasso and his artwork. Even nowadays, but especially back then, there was a lot of expectations of what people's roles were in the marriage, what the wife's roles were, and even what the husband's roles were, and there were expectations and weight put on everybody's shoulders. A captivated firefly near the light, and another's walk into history, where in the shade of a mammoth force of art. In the shade of a mammoth force of art is the whole idea that she is this mediocre person, mediocre at dancing. She's a housewife, and he is a force to be reckoned with in the art world. And all these thoughts that are consuming her are about the whole idea of having, of being in his shadow. Rendered her reality on simple canvas, truthful expression, relentlessly carved. And I think the thing about that ending line that makes it so powerful, it's the idea that she's having all these thoughts, that she is lost beneath his mammoth reputation in the art world. And she's sad, she's lost, maybe she's even angry. And this emotion that she's feeling that she would like to keep personal is for eternity captured because Picasso chose to paint her in that moment. I think it's a wonderful and intriguing write and very well done. And Rex, you read that great. and I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
It is Olga, the blank canvas, being painted in the image she found herself in at the end of the day. A rendered composite by Zealous Dreams, a captivated firefly near the light, what else we got? And others walk in the history wherein the shade of a mammoth force of art took and gave sustenance the wisdom of love and patience. And his revealing strokes and immortal shades in unfeigned abandon rendered her reality on simple canvas. The notation of how she found herself at the end of the day.
I like that. I like that because oftentimes, I like that you mentioned, you know, finding herself at the end of the day, because oftentimes at the end of the day, it is when we allow everything that happened throughout the day to almost, like, consume us. So, excellent observation there, Rex. Very well said. And now, Kel, now that you've listened to me and Rex bullshit our way through commenting, do you feel ready to say something?
Both of mine. Your comments were both very, very helpful, okay? Because I think I must be getting a little bit brain dead here. I like the way she mentioned Picasso, but she doesn't mention him by name. You know, he's just a mammoth force of art. And that's just her insight into who her husband was. And it was just the way he paints the picture is just really, really, well, in her words, surreal. Because it is. I feel that this piece is very surreal. It is also very, in some ways, it's very revealing about Olga as a person and how she sees herself. So it's a very well done writing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you're right, it is very revealing about her as a person, how she sees herself. And so, excellent comment there. All right. Let's see what we got next. And up next is Olga's Decision by Pink Fairy 5. And it goes like this. Olga has received the news for the third time. She did not welcome it either of the other times, and she certainly did not enjoy it from her maiden aunt. Her husband has been cheating. It is his right. She is owned by him. He inherited her lands and home when they wed. She has no rights. Being a woman, she understands this. A widow has rights, though. She begins plotting his death. This might take care of more than one problem, and he can no longer bring home diseases from other bed partners and home. And that one took a nice dark twist. Right?
Yeah.
And Kel, your thoughts on that?
Sorry.
Your thoughts on the poem?
It's not Pink Fairy's usual lighthearted writing. This is really dark and deep. You know, she understands that the widow has rights, so she begins plotting his death. Oh, my goodness.
Right? I know. It's a nice little
twist.
She's always good at
a very interesting
twist, but yeah.
Yeah, that's a very interesting done that.
Yeah, I have to agree. It does. It's a little darker twist than she usually does,
really,
but
awesome.
I like that. It is. It is awesome. She actually had somebody comment on her poem, and they were offering her words of comfort, and she had to say, thank you, this is fiction, which I think is a sign of good fiction writing. If you can convince people that this is something
that is
really happening
yep.
to you, that it's real, it shows that you've captured the emotion of the moment. So, yeah, I have to agree, Cal. That was an excellent comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Only a few words. Oh, Pink, you devious little fairy.
What?
He said, oh, Pink, you devious little fairy. I like that.
Oh, my goodness.
And
yeah, I was really surprised at that.
And I think Pink Fairy's going to get a big smile out of that comment, Rex. I do like how she, because I think anybody who's been cheated on, you know, can have thoughts of revenge. And I don't think it's thoughts of revenge that make you a bad person. Or it's.
I should have added that. Oh, Pink, you devious little fairy. It's murder, she wrote.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, my golly. I am Landers would approve.
Absolutely. Those are great comments. I would say the one, like, I really like how she went dark with this, and I like how the darkness kind of puts in a little bit of, you know, humor and, you know, appreciation for, you know, the twist at the end. The one curious note I would like to mention is I do think this makes a great social commentary on how back in those days women were considered property. They were considered owned, and they considered
mm-hmm.
no rights of their own. But, and this is where the twist comes, they realize a widow has rights. And so I thought that was a nice, a really intelligent touch to the historical accuracy of what it was like to be a woman in the past with no rights. So definitely a fun, creative, and thought-provoking write, and very well done.
Yes.
And let's see here.
Oh, don't get that worked up, Tony. Oh, my God. Okay.
All right, and let's see. I'm trying to remember who read what. Okay, it is definitely Kel's turn to read, and all right. Up next we have Moment of Silence by Allison Hodges. And Kel, would you give that a read for us, please?
Definitely. Moment of Silence. She counted the moments that life had lain within her. She counted the minutes till that life would cease to be. No ring upon her finger to hold this buzzing in. No gown decked gay lay upon the folded horizon. She blew soft prayers between her lips into the heavens, seeking absolution for the deed that must be done. Upon deaf ears, compassion missing, as is lost grace, only stone rules sight, no leeway for moss to grow. I'm going to kill my son. And told.
Oh, my.
That wasn't in it.
I can relate to that, Kel. I've butted heads more than once with my son. Oh, my goodness. Well, that was a great read there, and we completely understand family distractions and noise. They happen all the time.
Oh, my God.
Well, first of all, I have to say it's really great to see Allison. I know she has, seems like she's been writing for a while, so it's great to see her. It's great to see her writing. This is a powerful brevity, you know, and as we all know, sometimes in life people have to make difficult decisions, or it's got that whole feel of being backed into a corner due to circumstance and trying to find that compassion, trying to find that grace that you need. Because of, you know, life choices that have happened, and then it falls upon deaf ears. I think that was really powerful. Upon deaf ears, compassion missing, as his lost grace, only stone rules light. No leeway for moss to grow. That rolling stone gathers no moss, I think was a wonderful reference to the thought of the person, the man who loved and left. I liked that she used that metaphor. You can tell it's just one of those deeply emotive rites, and just excellent brevity and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, the thought, I missed it. The stone rules type. There's something in that. I can't remember. It has to do with a remedy that induces abortion back in the days. I can't remember the what it is in the moment, but that's the folded thought with that. This only stone rules type. An inducement that works with a potion meant to incur the thought to release and jettisoning the what is already growing. The thought, no leeway for moss to grow, is time is that essence. It is now or never, because it is already late enough. And the fact that she's getting no absolution for the deed that must be done, she's already resolved herself for the fact that she's breaking God's covenant, and there will be no absolution for this deed because she's already made up her mind.
Yeah, absolutely. It really hits hard emotionally, and it does have some, like you said, Steppel's references that, have a technical accuracy and yet, hit hard emotionally. And the idea of the finding resolution and the difficulty of it. So. Excellent comment there, Rex. And
that's what I'm sorry. It's called a penny royale.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. They actually like the copper IUDs. They actually back in ancient Arabic times would put copper in the uteruses of their camels when they didn't want them to get pregnant.
Wow.
But. Well, I have to say, we do have a few carryovers, but for the next After Midnight show, we're doing carryovers and open poetry, so we will be putting them on there. And thank you to Rex, as always, for being here and being an awesome co-host. Thank you, Kel, for calling in. I know you did two shows in a row, so you are greatly appreciated. Thank you to Jeremy for hanging on the board, to those who wrote for the show, who are listening now or will be listening later. We appreciate you all. Join us later tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company, and Saturday, 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Part Center, Part Same with Aphasiana. And then Sunday, 12:30 a.m. Eastern, 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time, I think. I don't know. Well, anyways, sometime this weekend, we are going to be having a Part 2 show. I know. Can you tell my brain is just getting fried at the end of a show? Part 2 of the Memorial Day show. And also, please make sure to check out the contest that Rex is running for his Rhythm and Rhyme show. And tell us about that, Rex.
It is the song Nantucket Sleigh Ride by Mountain. It's a great tune.
Oh, yeah, I already have that one done.
It offers up the life and how hard it was to the guys who went whaling in the 1820s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
I've already got one done for that.
Yeah, I'm hoping to work on that, but prompt choice there, Rex. I'm looking forward to that show. And this has been a wonderful show, and I hope everyone has a great night.
You too. Thank you, guys.
Good night, people. See you on the other side.